Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the program tonight, a developing crisis in Chennai and in other parts of Tamil Nadu with heavy flooding of the city area as a result of a severe cyclone off the coast. Cyclone Migjam is expected to hit the Andhra Pradesh coastline between Nellore and Machilipatnam around midnight. But the situation in Chennai has been truly awful today. Floods in the city. Let's have some shots up of that. Floods in the city. Electricity switched off. Internet access very patchy. Massive water logging. Some metro services affected. The airport shut down. First 11 tonight and now till tomorrow 9 a.m. There is a lot of water on the tarmac. We'll bring you the latest on the ground situation, a frightening reminder of the floods which had hit the city a few years back. Next on the show, the Congress wiped out in 3 states in the Hindi heartland. What's the impact on the India parties, the India alliance? Already the Trinamool Congress has decided to skip a meeting called by the Congress. Does the India alliance truly have a vision that can challenge the BJP after these results? Also on the show, it's been a fascinating election in Mizoram. The Zoram People's Movement, a party which was registered as late as 2019, has won. Lal Dohoma, a police officer who once guarded Indira Gandhi, will be the new chief minister. The ruling Mizo National Front has been decimated, with Chief Minister Zoram Thanga losing his own seat. The Congress, which used to be a key player in Mizoram, is quite clearly no longer the force that it once used to be. But let's go straight across to NDTV's Sam Daniel, who's reporting from Chennai. I'm also joined by Pratibha, who's in Vijayawada right now, close to the area where landfall is expected to take place. Sam, what is the situation now as far as flooding is concerned in large parts of Chennai? All right.
The challenge authorities face now is that because the waves hit the cyclone,
that slow. In a moment, we'll try and fix that audio cable issue. But let me just go across to Pratibha. Pratibha, where are you and what is the situation where you're at?
Well, in fact, I'm about 160 to 170 kilometers from the place where the landfall is expected, which is between Nellore and Machilipatnam. And according to the latest information that we gather from the weather department here in Andhra Pradesh, the landfall is expected at around 5 a.m. Is what we've been given to understand. Plus or minus an hour here and there. And it is exactly near a district called Bapatla. And the districts in and around that coastal region of Andhra Pradesh, at least around 8 of them have been issued red alert by the government of Andhra Pradesh, and most of them have been asked to stay indoors. In fact, as you see here in Vijayawada, gusty winds have already begun, and heavy to very heavy rains are expected in and around this region, at least until December 8th, according to the weather department. A lot of precautionary measures have been put in place right around the coastal regions, around 8 districts, around 64 cyclone relief centers that have been set up, at least in Krishna district alone. And according to the collector there of Krishna district, he did mention that around 8,000 people are believed to be evacuated from the low-lying areas of the coastal region of Krishna district and have been shifted to these relief centers that have been set up. A lot of medical health camps as well as food and beverages that have been set up to ensure that they are well taken care of. And at the same time, most of the stocks in terms of crops as well as paddies have all been shifted to various godowns. And a lot of gusty winds over here, so most of them have been given blankets as well to keep them well protected. Most of them have been asked to stay indoors and not to venture out, even fishermen not to venture into the sea. And a lot of these places.
All right, Pratibha, we've lost that video
like
signal with you. The images
right
we were
now
playing out were of Chennai. We'll come back to you in just a moment. Let's go back to Sam. Sam, we fairly dramatic footage earlier in the day, floods in residential areas, cars being moved aside. What is the situation now overall as far as flooding is concerned?
Well, flooding continues across Chennai, equally spread all across the city as we speak now, Vishnu. That's because pockets of Chennai received up to 29 centimeters of rain over the last 24 hours. And unless the rain stops, authorities say the flooding would continue. And the major reason why the flooding, the outflow into the sea is slow, is that they say because of the cyclone, the impact actually triggers backlash that hits back on all the four outflows from the city, and that's a major challenge for the slow draining of these flooding. Authorities say if the rain stops now, which they expect could be around 11 o'clock, from then it will be 12 hours for them to see the entire city being drained. And the major challenge for them would be the low-lying pockets, where they say they have deployed around 500 giant water pumps, and that will be triggered, activated to pump out the waters. The whole night, most parts of the city will not have electricity because all are underground cables, and that could lead to electrocution. Authorities are not taking any chances. Around 3,000 electricity workers have come from other cities, other districts, to help in restoration of power, which could happen, begin only from tomorrow noon after the rainfall stops. And Chief Minister M.K. Stalin has appointed one senior bureaucrat for every zone in Chennai to intervene to make sure
things could be... Let's talk a little bit about the airport. We've got pictures of the airport as well. A lot of water was actually flooding in. Let's have the pictures of the airport up, if we can. Please, Sam, tell us what the situation there is.
Well, 12 flights were cancelled to begin with, some diverted, but at that point they were able to pump the waters away from the runway. But around 11 o'clock this morning onwards, things became worse and they decided to shut down the runway. First till 11 o'clock this morning, later till 7 this evening, and now they've decided it will be only from 9 in the morning tomorrow they may resume flights actually. If rain stopped, then chances of resumption early. Otherwise, things could get delayed. And even as we speak, local trains, local buses, and even train services to and from Chennai Central Station have been largely cancelled or diverted because of the water logging on the tracks and the signal issues because of incessant rainfall. Call it collapse of the city's rain infrastructure or impact of climate change. It's going to be a nightmare, particularly for people living in low-lying pockets, the homeless, the poor people, as they spend the wet night. And authorities say around 4,500 relief camps have been kept ready. At least a few thousand people have been moved to these shelters from Chennai, Thiruvallur and Kadalur districts. And government has declared yet another public holiday tomorrow. Private companies have been advised to let their employees work from home, hoping that there will be respite from this.
All right, Sam, I'm going to interrupt you and come back to you in just a few moments from now. I'm joined by Dr. Mrityunjay Mohapatra, Director General of the Indian Met Department. Sir, as far as wind speeds are concerned, can you tell us what the wind speeds are presently and at what time will Migjom, that's the cyclone, make landfall?
So at present, wind speed is about 90 to 100 kilometers per hour near the center of the cyclone. And along Nellore and Prakasam districts, wind speed is about 70 to 80 kilometers per hour. The system is moving northward. Therefore, the wind speed near Chennai, Thiruvallur and Kanchipuram districts of Tamil Nadu are decreasing gradually. And at present, it is about 50 to 60 kilometers per hour. It will further decrease near Tamil Nadu coast. But it will increase gradually, and from midnight, it may be 90 to 100 kilometers per hour wind speed between Nellore and Machilipatnam, and it will continue till 5th December forenoon. At the time of landfall, the maximum impact will be over Kanchipuram and Bapatla district with this type of wind speed. Before that, it will gradually going on impacting Nellore, then Prakasam district, and finally, it is the Bapatla and Krishna district. The rainfall is continuing.
How would you categorize the storm, sir, and what is the damage that it can cause?
Yeah, this is a severe cyclone storm which has got the potential to cause breaking of tree branches, uprooting of small and medium trees, and some cases large avenue trees also. Also, it can have the large-scale damage to the coastal hotmans, thatched houses, mud houses, partial damage to electric poles and telephone poles, and there could be damage to hoardings and loose vulnerable structures, which can indirectly impact the human beings also. At the same time, these rainfall will cause inundation, flooding, just like it has happened in north coastal Tamil Nadu districts, especially Chennai. So the towns and cities along coastal Andhra Pradesh also will have extremely heavy rainfall, and sometimes it will be exceptionally heavy, 30 to 40 centimeter. So therefore, we should be prepared for the floodings in these areas also because of this rainfall tonight and also on 5th. From 6th, rainfall activity will decrease over Andhra Pradesh. At the same time, 1 to 1.5 meter height storm surge, that is the tidal wave above the astronomical tide, will inundate the low-lying areas of south coastal Andhra Pradesh, and it will be maximum peak storm surge will be over Bapatla and Krishna district.
So,
we are expecting the landfall
understand.
Between Nellore and Machilipatnam.
Yes, sir. So, one sec. Let me get in a few questions so that we get a couple of clear answers from you as well. For people who are able to watch in Chennai, and now with the electricity situation being what it is, not very many, they would want to know when the wind speeds will start decreasing, when the rainfall will start decreasing, because they want the floodwaters to go down. Would it be fair to say after midnight, the situation in the greater Chennai area might start to improve?
Yes, you are correct. After midnight, the situation will improve over greater Chennai city and also the neighborhood. With decrease in rainfall intensity, we will not expect any extremely heavy rainfall after midnight, and only heavy rainfall, isolated very heavy rainfall, can be expected after that. Certainly, the rainfall intensity will decrease. Wind speed also will decrease as the cyclone is moving away from Chennai towards the north. At present, it is 50 to 60 kilometers per hour wind speed, gusting to 70 kilometers per hour. After midnight, it will become around 35 to 45 kilometers per hour.
And what will
by morning
will the speed
of tomorrow,
be, sir, when
it will
makes
be,
landfall in Andhra Pradesh at about what 5 a.m. or so? Is that right? What would the wind speed then be?
Yeah. Over Andhra Pradesh coastal area, now maximum wind is of 70 to 80 kmph. It's prevailing over Nellore and adjoining Prakasam districts. It will gradually increase and extend towards the north, Bapatla and Krishna district after midnight. At the time of landfall, which are expecting forenoon of 5th,
forenoon, okay,
close to Bapatla, at that time wind speed will be about 90 to 100 km per hour over Bapatla and Krishna districts. And Nellore district's rainfall speed by that time will decrease.
Okay, so this is important news, sir, and thank you very much for sharing time with us. 90 to 100 kilometers per hour likely when it does make landfall in the Krishna district or and the Bapatla areas as well. But you're mentioning forenoon, so it's not going to be 5 a.m. as we earlier thought. It would be perhaps a few hours before 12 tomorrow afternoon, right?
Yeah. The intensity will be felt till tomorrow noon. Thereafter, after the landfall, it will decrease significantly and wind speed will decrease. And also accordingly, the rainfall will decrease over south coastal Andhra Pradesh, but rainfall will continue after noon over the north coastal Andhra Pradesh and central part of Andhra Pradesh.
So
on 6th only,
yes,
it will be limited only to the district to the north of Visakhapatnam with heavy to very heavy rainfall.
All right. So, thank you very much for sharing those details with us, Dr. Mohapatra, Director General of the Indian Med Department. We'll be following that situation and relying on your timely updates. Thank you very much indeed. Before we go back to our correspondence, I'd like to bring up that animated graphic. It comes from a site, earth.nullschool, and it actually gives you the actual wind speeds. You can tap on this and actually get that data, but that's pretty much the location of the cyclone right now. Those are the wind speeds. It is now moving gradually north of the greater Chennai area, where after midnight, the situation might start improving with a little bit less rainfall. Hopefully that would enable floodwaters to get out. Let me go back to my colleagues, Pratibha and Sam. All right. So, Sam, we heard the IMD chief over there. Pratibha, you may have heard him as well. As far as Chennai is concerned, likely a somewhat better situation after midnight with less rainfall. Is there any idea, or would you have any idea, Sam, on how long it would take for the floodwaters to recede appreciably?
Vishnu, I spoke to the Greater Chennai Commissioner, Dr. Radhakrishnan. He says from the time the rain stops, which is expected to be around 11 o'clock or around midnight, yeah, it may take 12 hours for the core part of the city to be completely drained of this flooding. And then low-lying areas may take some more time, which they hope they will be able to deploy the giant water pumps already in place to pump these waters out. But otherwise, in 12 hours, they say the city will be largely getting back to normalcy with not much of water logging at all. By then, they also hope that there will be less of backlash in the sea since the cyclone has moved away. So that means a faster draining on all the four outlets from the city into the sea, Vishnu. And then, of course, the challenge would be to restore the power supply, which could take as early as noon and could extend for yet another day for the city to be completely restored.
It's only then that we'll get an idea of the damage which has taken place. Damage to vehicles, there have been numbering, heaven knows, possibly in the thousands over there. Damage to road infrastructure.
That's
right. Ashwin, our international cricket star, R. Ashwin, tweeted a picture of a sinkhole forming or of a part of a road collapsing with water and everything going. So it's dangerous in many areas.
That's right. The extent of damage would be only after the waters drain, particularly in terms of the damage to vehicles, cars being washed away and things like that. And of course, to low-lying areas where waters have entered hundreds of homes, the kind of property losses for them. And the Home Minister has spoken to M.K. Stalin, who says the state would make an assessment and then would seek some kind of assistance. But yes, this in a sense brings back memories of the 2015 floods in Chennai. Although both are massive in different sense, it brings back those memories over the kind of waterlogging, inundation and the kind of damage and the way, the extent of people it has affected this time. Vishnu.
Sam, be careful out there. Thank you very much for reporting through the day in those flood waters. It is dangerous just to be in those flood waters. There is a health risk over there. And, you know, we advise people to be careful if they are moving around. Let me just go back to Pratibha for a bit. Pratibha, so what we heard the Met Department chief say is that forenoon tomorrow is when it's going to make landfall. Could you give us an idea of what you're hearing from Bapatla and the Krishna district, where landfall is going to take place in terms of evacuations?
In fact, the efforts have already begun in both these districts, like you mentioned, Bapatla as well as Krishna districts, where the landfall is expected, where people have been working tirelessly right since this afternoon to evacuate. At least around 8,000 people is what we hear from Krishna district. People from the low-lying areas, especially farmers, people from the low-income groups as well as fishermen, all of them have been evacuated from those regions to a lot of these relief camps that have been set up, at least around 64 of them that have been set up, including food, beverages, as well as medical checkups that have also been organized, including blankets as well. In fact, gusty winds have already begun. We did speak about the wind speed, which will also increase by early morning tomorrow, and the impact of it will remain till around 4 noon tomorrow. And this is just in Vijayawada, where I'm stationed right now. And as I go closer to Machilipatnam and those areas which are close to Bapatla, where the landfall is expected, I'm sure it is likely to be even worse than the weather condition here right now. And at this point in time, what we also hear is that the cattle have also been shifted, including the crops as well as the paddies that have been stored in different other godowns to ensure that the farmers will be staying in peace while they are making efforts to expect the landfall while waiting at their respective relief camps. The NDRF teams as well as the SDRF teams are all put in place trying to ensure that people will be in safe zones at this point in time. And once the intensity levels would decrease is when they would be put into action to try and see if there are any kind of rescue efforts. But right now, well, a very tense situation in Andhra Pradesh, all of them at the edge of their seats.
All right. I'd like to thank you both very much for being with us, and do stay careful, Pratibha, as well. Tomorrow it's going to be a difficult day. We're going to move on. After its humiliating defeat in the three heartland states at the hands of the BJP, the Congress is facing bars from the India Alliance. Allies who are now taking the Congress party to task. The stunning defeats have dwindled the Congress leverage in the alliance and put brakes on its dream of possibly leading the alliance.
As the Congress nursed its wounds after losing Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan and Chhattisgarh to the BJP, India bloc allies wasted no time in adding insult to the Congress's injury, distancing the alliance from the defeat.
Lok Tantra mein log last word hai aur Congress mein jo log chahte hai ki bhai sab milke BJP ke sath ladai kare. मैं उनको यही कह सकता हूं कि समय कम है आप अपने हिसाब से सबको इकट्ठा करने का जो प्रयास है वो शुरू तो हो ही चुका है उसको फिर से एक बार करके अगर एक साथ लड़ाई करना चाहे तो इट शुड रिफ्लेक्ट इन योर एक्शन नॉट योर वर्ड्स.
ऑन द डे कांग्रेस प्रेसिडेंट मल्लिकार्जुन खड़गे कॉल्ड एन इंडिया ब्लॉक मीटिंग टू चार्ट द फ्यूचर कोर्स ऑफ एक्शन इट बिकेम क्लियर दैट द कांग्रेस पॉलिटिकल स्टॉक इन द ब्लॉक has taken a severe beating after the state results, which have put a big question mark on its claim to alliance leadership.
Sirf aur sirf Congress party ki haar hai. Unhone gathbandhan ke kisi bhi ghatak dal se na sampark kiya na sahyog mana. Wo apne balbute par BJP ko harane ki yojana bana rahe the, jo ek dhuasapna tha.
Nitish Kumar had earlier taken a jibe at the Congress for ignoring the alliance as it got too busy with state polls.
गठबंधन इस देश की राजनीति का यथार्थ है और गठबंधन कृत्रिम चीज नहीं है, यह अनवरत चीज है. बैठक से चुनाव के नतीजे नहीं प्रभावित होते हैं. जब तक साझा रणनीति और कार्यनीति नहीं बनेगी तब तक वह जनता का विश्वास प्राप्त नहीं होता है.
And there is hardly any love lost between the Congress and the Samajwadi Party in UP, where Akhilesh Yadav's party is the larger constituent of the alliance. He made his displeasure clear after being snubbed by Kamal Nath, an MP, in the run-up to the elections.
राजनीत में परिणाम आते हैं और जो भी परिणाम आएंगे कोई भी political party है उसको स्वीकार करेगी. लेकिन लड़ाई लंबी है. इन परिणामों से हमें और जिन लोगों को भारतीय जनता पार्टी जैसी बड़ी पार्टी का मुकाबला करना है उन्हें बहुत तैयारी करनी पड़ेगी. इसलिए मुझे उम्मीद है कि आने वाले समय में परिणाम दूसरे होंगे.
दीज थ्री स्टेट्स दैट द कांग्रेस लॉस्ट ऑन संडे कंट्रीब्यूट 65 सीट्स इन द लोकसभा. इन 2019 द बीजेपी डिस्पाइट लूजिंग देम ऑल इन द 2018 स्टेट पोल्स 161 ऑफ दीज सीट्स. This is just three states in the larger Hindi heartland states that send over half of the Lok Sabha MPs. The Congress is nowhere and the BJP has all but swept the heartland seats. In the larger states of Uttar Pradesh, Maharashtra, Bihar and Bengal, India allies, the SP in UP, the RJD-JDU in Bihar, the NCP Sena in Maharashtra and the TMC in Bengal will now bargain for more seats as the Congress stands defeated in a direct contest with the BJP. The party is now in power only in three states, Himachal Pradesh in the north and Karnataka and Telangana in the south. These three states account for just 49 Lok Sabha seats. In Bihar, Tamil Nadu and Jharkhand, the Congress is a junior partner in the alliance governments. The big regional leaders will now punch above their weight as the Congress keeps shedding its political capital one election at a time. NDTV Bureau Report.
All right, so how big a setback is this for the India Alliance ahead of the next elections? We are joined by Neeta Chaudhary, Shipra Mathur, Sanjal Shastri, the political analyst, Ghanshyam Tiwari of the Samajwadi Party, and Nagesh D, spokesperson of the Congress Party. Let me go across to Nagesh. What we've now been told is that Mamata Banerjee will not attend the next India Alliance meeting, which is scheduled on Wednesday. This announcement comes just a day after, you know, your election loss in those three states of the Hindi heartland. How much of a setback is that?
It's not a setback. Maybe she has some commitment, a prayer commitment. This may be a schedule lagger. That could be one reason. About the India Alliance is at very nurturing stage. we can't judge it, but in a shorter time, that whether India Alliance stand against BJP or not. Yes, Congress lost three of the state, which majorly contributes to the parliament, but it doesn't mean that they are stepping back to fight with what is ruling in the state, what is happening. If injustice is happening, definitely India Alliance would be stand up against the ruling class. But what I am trying to say to you is seeing this loss, we can't say that India Alliance is not up to fight against BJP.
No,
we
but Nagesh,
decided
tell me
to
this.
Fight together.
It's not just Mamata Banerjee. Omar Abdullah has also said, and I quote, on December 6th, the Congress chief has invited some India Alliance leaders for lunch. They recalled the India Alliance after 3 months. Let's see. So again, it seemed like a taunt from a partner of the alliance.
See, it could be we must see this way. India Alliance is a many blocks, right? We have to bring them on a line. There are things we supposed to be support, timely things, prayer commitment things. Let's say when Omar Abdullah's case comes, he may have some other things to do. But when it comes to India Alliance, a concrete line, designed. It takes time to bring multi minds together. But India, I'm sure, I believe that India Alliance holds a complete democratic essence, because multiple minds and multiple thoughts are there. They come up with their own idea. Some people think some.
All right. So it is. I take your point that it's a large alliance and it does take time. But let's see what the impact is going to be. Nija Chaudhary, we heard the Prime Minister speak yesterday after the election result. He had a certain vision, and Modi moved into campaign mode for the general elections within hours of this election ending. That narrative which the BJP has, do you believe that the India Alliance has anywhere close to that narrative going forward?
Look, the India Alliance doesn't have the narrative that is needed. It doesn't have the organization that's needed. But today, I am simply amazed at the reaction of the allies. You know, when a member of the family faces failure or defeat or falls flat on their face, the rest of the members of the family don't heap, demoralization on them, further, pulling them down. You hold their hands. If you're serious about meeting the challenge that the Modi juggernaut poses to the India Alliance, you will have to sit down and strategize together. The Congress may have made a mistake, or may not have made a mistake, by not going in with the allies in these states where elections have just been held. But to start attacking so many of the allies, to start attacking the Congress on the next day, how are you going to create the unity? How are you going to create the one-on-one contest, which is the core issue for India Alliance? More than the narrative, more than the leadership issue, it is whether you can create one-on-one contest against the BJP and the NDA in the 400 Lok Sabha seats that the India Alliance earmarked. I'm simply amazed, today at this kind of avalanche of attack against the Congress. It may or may not deserve it. That's not the point here.
No, but I think your point, Nija, that it is. Where does it show cohesion? Ghanshyam Tiwari, is the India Alliance essentially stumped after this election loss of the Congress?
Good evening, Vishnu, to you, my fellow co-panelists and the viewers. I think that point that Nirjaji is making is right, and it will sit well with the viewers. But there are three things that I see emerging from here. One is that in the Hindi heartland, Congress will cede leadership stage to the regional players who have stronger organizations in the heartland and have more credible campaigns going. That said, Congress achieving 40% plus vote share in multiple states is definitely not a lost battle. It's a goal post where the India Alliance has to achieve near 49%, which is what BJP achieved in Madhya Pradesh, for example. The second is that BJP getting shunned from the south of India means that there is an aspirational narrative that can be built on top of the current setup, and Congress can show a greater leadership role in building that narrative. These two things, combined with the fact that Prime Minister Modi's, no matter how popular he may seem after this verdict, that his core promises in the last 10 years, whether it is to the youth or to people in general or farmers, have not materialized and do not lead to an aspirational agenda for a family today.
But is Panchab, with all respect, the results seem to suggest otherwise.
Well, yes, that is exactly what I said, that while yesterday's verdict may look different, but the fact is that going into 2024, each of the combination, whether it is NDA or India Alliance, has to promise something.
Okay.
The Achhe Din that Modi promised is not here, whereas the agenda for India for 2024 can be more aspirational, depending on how India Alliance builds
it. You need to have that aspirational agenda first, Ghanshyam. I would suggest that's still not emerged. But I'll come back to you in just a moment. I wanted to go across, I wanted to return to Nageshti because Ghanshyam Tiwari had an important point to make. He said that there is an expectation of the Congress, quote, ceding leadership space in the heartland, right? Is that something that the Congress is willing to do when it comes to 2024?
The Congress has been doing that. See, one thing is supposed to observe that vote share of the Congress got increased, whether it may be. We gave a tough fight in Chhattisgarh too. In fact, I can't claim it a tough fight in Madhya Pradesh too. You have to see it that way. Somewhere, I believe, Congress, that so-called Modi wave is getting degraded, eroded, because Congress is raising its voice and raising its strength when it comes to vote bank share. So that is what one's supposed to observe here. And when it comes to the leadership, yes, Congress party has been doing it. In future, Congress party will do a survival of the fittest kind of the leadership would bring in poor upon.
Sanjal Shastri, the Prime Minister yesterday spelt it out. He said, number one, women, number two, Adivasis, number three, young people. And he built in the development agenda through the prism of these groups. That is what the Prime Minister is going to fight, or the BJP is going to fight the next elections on. What is the India Alliance going to fight the next elections on?
Vishnu, I think that's one of the key concerns for the Alliance. Clearly, 2019 demonstrated that you cannot fight an election merely on an agenda of defeating the BJP. So you need a clear, I would say, an ideological the sort of cohesion within the alliance. So you need to set the agenda. That is very critical. And one thing Madhya Pradesh has shown, that the soft Hindutva plank is not going to work. So I think in the coming days, it's critical for the India Alliance to really sit together and identify an ideological plank on which they can fight the election. Probably an alternative narrative that they would set when compared to the BJP and the NDA. So at the heart of it, you cannot fight an election in 2024 purely based on a single point agenda of defeating the BJP. If that is the case, then I do not see much hope for the India Alliance to make much headway in 2024. It's critical for them to come up with an agenda and come up with and fight the election based on a vision, based on an idea.
Shipra Mathur, would you say that the campaign of the Congress party, not entirely, but to a large extent, in the Hindi heartland, was on this negative agenda of taking on the Prime Minister, taking on all sorts of allegations which have been there against him, and throwing in a couple of sops, but not having a larger image or a larger picture that young people in India, women in India, Adivasis in India, the groups that the BJP has said are absolutely key, that none of these groups really saw anything as being transformative, transformational, aspirational. Do you believe that that's what the Congress lacked?
Absolutely. If you see the Hindi heartlands, they fail to assess that what are the aspirations of the new voters, what are the aspirations of the tribal belt or the OBCs. That's a complete failure if you see this Chhattisgarh results, especially because OBC and tribal factor was so crucial. And I would also quote the statement of Rajasthan Assembly's Speaker C.P. Joshi, who a Congress leader, a big leader, but he lost his seat also. And in his interview, he has written today that the advantage with the BJP is that it's a well-organized and well-oiled party. So they remain active throughout 5 years, not at the, when the elections are closed, they become active. And at the same time, we also see that what is the biggest, missing point in the Congress party or the alliance also, if you talk about it. There's a lot of chaos and confusion amongst them. And also that there's no cadre at work on the ground. While on the contrary, if you see these elections, especially in Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan and Chhattisgarh also, the BJP cadre was also at work. And I was speaking to some people in RSS also. Mm-hmm. They have also said that we have this time, I think this is first election perhaps, that the RSS cadre has also actively participated in the political process. So that vote swing that is so visible in all four states, in Rajasthan, 2% increase in vote share. In MP also, 5-6% of increase in vote share. In MP also, in Telangana also. The increase in vote share has completely changed the scenario. And I think what has to be understood by the Congress or the Alliance, that if you are not actively working on targeting, and this narcissism also, that, if you see the elections in Rajasthan, the advertisement that if you do not vote for Congress party, these Chiranjeevi Yojana, you will not be benefited by this Yojana. So that threat and that fear factor that they tried to encash didn't work here.
Okay.
That caste census also was supposed to be a big issue for the Congress.
And it turned out not to be that.
Pardon?
No, it didn't turn out to be a big issue at all. In fact, what did work to the favor of the BJP were carefully scripted programs, Ladli Behna, for example, which was immaculately run. The deliverables were achieved and people were happy, as opposed to just potentially throwing sops in the direction of voters, which is a time-tested old method, which in today's India may not actually work. But be that as it may, Nija, it has been said, and it's been said by Mamata Banerjee today, that the Congress would have done better if some votes were not cut by India parties. Is there any electoral sense in what she said?
Yes, there is. I think if few seats had been given to the allies, tactically, strategically, it would have worked better in cementing the ties between the India alliance. So that is a given that Congress, acted hoity-toity in some states and didn't do so, that's another story. But do you throw the baby with the bathwater? I mean, what is it that you're in the face of such a huge sweep in favor of the BJP in the Hindi heartland states? I mean, the challenge is huge for India. But how are they going? They're not going to meet the challenge by attacking each other. This, to me, is inexplicable. I can understand that the regional parties are afraid that in the long run, the Congress may devour them rather than meet the challenge of the BJP, as has happened in Telangana, where it has hurt the BRS, but it's not hurt the BJP in the North Indian states. And of course, the good part of the story, the flip side of the story is that adjacent Congress may be easier to deal with in terms of adjustment of sure. The India Alliance for the Lok Sabha election. That may be the flip side, as I say, a good part of it. Many people were worried, suppose they win two or three states, they their arrogance will touch the skies. Many people, I was in Bombay and opposition leaders were heard talking about this. So anyway, it's nothing to celebrate, but certainly it's understandable that there is demoralization in the opposition ranks. But what is the determination with which they are going to counter this? Or are they going to throw in the towel?
Nagesh, would you like to take that finally? People want to know if there is a viable, and Ghanshyam, I'll come to you after that. Nagesh first, where is a viable opposition?
As ma'am said, previously, as she said that Congress would be better going alone and taking on to BJP. But when it comes to regional party, it performed very well in the Telangana. This gives a lesson that Congress is able enough to tackle at the national level too. India Alliance is a...
Go ahead, Nagesh. All right, we've lost that line with him. Ghanshyam, go ahead.
Well, I think that there are three things that will hold out for India Alliance. One is that, as I said, there's a stronger possibility of a tighter alliance between regional parties and Congress Party with a focus on Hindi heartland narrative. It is not that BJP has a sweeping narrative. They have a few percentage higher votes, but the collective strength of JDU, Samajwadi Party, RJD, Aam Aadmi Party and Congress, given their vote share in these three states, is also a massive strength. Second is that the fact that BJP has been shunned out of South and largely a symbol of aspirational India gives us opportunity to tackle the question which often we as Indians ask, that what is the aspirational narrative that opposition has to present. And third is that truly, if one has to look at fact to fact, there is no aspirational narrative that is going to come out of BJP in the run up to 2024. There is not going to be a Chidin. There is not going to be a promise of a 500 rupees cylinder. There isn't going to be a promise of 50 rupees petrol. There isn't going to be a promise of jobs. There isn't going to be a promise of doubling the farm incomes or a Bhrashtachar-free run up. These are all promises that have run their course for 10 years and not delivered. So if Mr. Modi comes and repeats these promises, people will not believe it. The Modi ki guarantee can be a hit in November 2023, but it is going to be a flop in May 2024.
All right.
Because they have run their course. In contrast, there is a parallel guarantee for aspirational India that India bloc can make in a more credible manner, and that parallel guarantee will have the grassrootedness that caste census kind of agenda has in Bihar and Uttar Pradesh in particular, and it will have the aspirational front that the South is more and more representing.
So North versus South, Ghanshyam, is that where you see the next elections being, that essentially in the north of the country, the India Alliance, where the maximum number of seats are, is in deep trouble, but yes, they've consolidated in the south of the country?
Well, in the south is rejecting BJP for sure. That is visible from Karnataka,
sure,
to Telangana.
Yes.
That is given on facts. I'm not calling north versus south. If you look at the axis right now, it is largely a few northern states and a couple of western states. But if you look at south and east of India, the BJP juggernaut does not exist.
Okay.
Whether it is the southern state, whether it is Orissa, whether it is Bengal, whether it is Bihar, and there on northeast of India, Manipur is still simmering.
Well,
so
we'll
and Mizoram results are up. So the axis is not just north versus south. It is more of a few northern states and a couple of western states.
All right.
And if you look at the other side, which is Maharashtra, the story is yet to be written.
All right.
With respect to what is going to happen.
Okay.
In Maharashtra.
Well, the story is yet to be written. Let's see what finally takes place. I'm going to have to leave this discussion here because there is another fascinating election which has taken place. That's in Mizoram, where a 6-year-old political party has scripted history. We'll be looking at that situation after this short break. Welcome back. In Mizoram, a 6-year-old political party has scripted history. The Zoram People's Movement, or ZPM, has comprehensively won in the Mizoram Assembly polls, counting for which was held today, a day after counting was held in the other states. The ZPM won 27 of the total 40. The ruling MNF was reduced to just 10 seats, and the national parties, the BJP and the Congress, won 2 and 1 seat. Just 1 seat for the Congress, respectively. Well, joining us now to look at this, Shaunjoy Hazarika and Hoinu Hausel. Thank you both very much for being with us. Shaunjoy Hazarika, the person who's going to be the chief minister, absolutely fascinating. And we look at the broader picture, but I'm just fascinated by the history of Lal Dohoma. He's been a bodyguard of Indira Gandhi in the past. He was disqualified a couple of times. So he's been up and down in politics. And this, in a sense, is his greatest triumph, right? After decades of being in the political turf.
Yeah, well, it's quite a, as you said, it's quite an eventful journey from a top cop to the chief minister, the next chief minister of Mizoram. And he's not a young man. He's 74 years old, but he's leading a very young party. But the wind, I think the winds of change were blowing as far back as October. I was there for a couple of weeks and got a sense of how people, young people particularly, were gravitating towards the ZPM because it represented aspiration, hope, and a better deal for farmers. I think people just wanted a change. I think that was extremely visible, apart from all the other issues of migrants from Manipur, displaced people from Manipur, Chin refugees from Myanmar, etc. I mean, we'll get into that later, but this was definitely something very clear that people wanted a change. 88% of people voted, 62% of the population, of the voting population, is young. So that was basically right.
So again, that entire buzz of aspiration, which is in a very different context, guided what young people in other parts of the country also wanted in these elections. Hoinui, the Lal Dohoma also has the dubious distinction of being the first MP to be disqualified under the anti-defection law. Be that as it may, what is his big draw to people in Mizoram, in your opinion?
Yeah, thank you, Vishnu. I've been speaking to a lot of friends and, you know, people in Mizoram. And also, if we look at his party, the very formation of ZPM, which was formed, as you said, a very young party, which is really a representation of different voices, because we must remember that it's a coalition of six regional parties. So he brings with him not just his personal voice and the experience of many, many decades in different fields and different aspects, but he also brings with him voices from different parts of the state. So I think it is a very, very representative of not just aspirations, but also different concerns. For instance, if you look at the coalition parties that actually formed this one, and of course it was called the Zoram People's Movement, it takes into account, for instance, Mizoram People's Conference, Zoram Nationalist Party, Zoram Exodus Movement, Zoram Decentralization Forum, Zoram Reformation Forum, and of course the Mizoram People Party. So it takes and it brings together many, many voices. And I think it is something which the people of Mizoram, which have also evolved, which have grown over decades, are also longing for a change. And this is a very perfect voice that captures voices from different corners, different age group, and of course the young people who are now aspiring to be on the same level or at par with the rest of the country.
Sure.
And of course, you said that he's not young. I mean, yes, that is the wisdom that he brings. You know, the experience and the wisdom is what is going to lead the young, the aspirations sure. of the Mizo people.
Shonjoida, where is the Congress, which used to be such a dominating force in politics in the state? They're down to one state. Is that because after Lal Thanhaula, the Congress has just not been able to find a leader of any great stature?
I think Lal Thanhaula did the wise thing. He retired
right
after the last defeat.
When in doubt, Shonjoida?
I'm sorry?
When in doubt, right? Retire.
In doubt. Retire. But his legacy is protected. And you can't say that of Zoram Thanga, because he lost his own seat. His party has to elect somebody else. These are the two most recognized faces of Mizoram politics who dominated it for 37 years. Either of these guys, and Lal Denga briefly, were the chief ministers of the state for the last 37 years. So people obviously wanted a change, and they voted for that. That's one specific thing.
Sure.
The other thing I would mention is that Lal Dohoma, one of the big attractions about him in the rural communities has been his offer to fix a minimum support price for four cash crops. That's broomsticks, ginger, turmeric, and chilies. And, Mizoram has this contradiction of being a very literate state, the second most highest literacy rate after Kerala, but it's also very poor, you know, and this is something I think that has resonated very well with the rural communities.
Hoinu, would it be fair to say that a large number of supporters of the Congress in the past have shifted loyalties and see the ZPM as being much more representative of their aspirations than what the Congress once was?
I don't think it would be right to say, I would hesitate to say that they've shift loyalties. I think the Mizos have also been practical and they have to know what works for them in this very dynamic political, very dynamic political scenario. Things change and the Mizos have also come of age to understand what's good for them. For instance, if you look at Mizoram, which has a lot of potential for industry, they don't have any big industry. And I've been speaking to a lot of young people and they do aspire to have an industry, given that, they have, for instance, textile, they have horticulture, all of those could be leveraged, but nothing so much has been done. So I think a lot of young people have come out of gone back to the state. Some people are farming, some people are doing, small scale entrepreneurship, which have a large scope of being leveraged and taken up to a level which is competing, which can compete with the rest of, at par with any other state. So therefore, I think the youth have also realized, that they need to change and they need to, go with a party that holds promise and future for them. It's not really about shifting loyalties. I think people of Mizoram are very, very politically very aware. And therefore, it is just a very gentle shift to what is the, what is the demand and what the time calls for right now.
Right. Well, I'd like to thank you both very much for being with us. It has been a fascinating election across the country, certainly in Mizoram as well. A new set of politics, a very young political party with an experienced chief minister. How will it impact the lives of millions? Thanks, both of you, for being with us. We need to take a short break from all of us here.